there's an identity and meaning that's associated with that, which if you go, okay, meaning and control, how am I going to take in my experience? How am I going to control my experience? If you're bringing it from the past always, it's very different than if you're bringing it from the future, which then affects your optimism, your resilience, all the ways in which you go about living your extraordinary life.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio. Now, we don't want you to worry about taking too many notes, so you can join the Autoimmune Hour's Courage Club, and we'll send you the transcripts and show notes from every episode. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And as always, I'm just thrilled to be with you here tonight. And I've got a special treat on two fronts. Can you believe it? It's the 250th episode. 250 episodes, guys. We're closing in on our fifth year says we're doing this too. So, I mean, that's amazing to me as we're doing that many things and changing the world. I am just so excited that you, as part of my Courage Club community here, are changing the world with us as we continue to optimize our health and rediscover the world. And tonight I invited a very, very, very special friend to be on the show. Have you ever had one of those partners you just call your wisdom partner? And if you want wisdom, you just call them up. That's this guy, one of my wisdom partners, because we share a lot of similarities. And, you know, I can just kick ideas around with him. And he's like right there with me, following along with my ideas. So very creative soul who helps me be creative. So let me introduce Stephen Hobbs. He is an eco-creator, entrepreneur, writer, and philanthropist for children and trees. He's committed to the development of natural educator for delivery of extraordinary experiences with their community of significance. In their words, he's a lot about story that we tell ourselves and the stories of our lives. And so I've got more of this amazing bio here. He published 15 books and he's developed 500 plus workshops around the world, as well as co-founded the International Mentoring Community. So we're going to talk multiple ways, just multiple things today, because I just love the creative mind of Stephen Hobbs. So welcome, Stephen. Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, it's great to be here, Sharon, and I'm looking forward to sharing some words.
Sharing some words, I know. One of the things that Stephen and I both will acknowledge that we're both word nerds, and we love the way that words create our meaning. Now, Stephen, last time you and I talked offline, we were talking about this idea of story and the stories we tell ourselves, the stories we share, and this idea of how it can create our current life, create our current reality, depending on how we're telling the story. So give your thoughts on how we tell stories to ourselves.
Well, words are important. Words matter. There is energy that's associated with the words that we use. And we can go back into the literature and find that words like shame and guilt have a different energy than love and joy.
Yes.
So that just alone, you go, well, hang on, let me pay attention to that, just to that observation, to that research. So when we're telling stories, we're at one level, but if we're sharing stories, we're at a different level. So this notion of telling stories is, I associate that with how we manage our life. But when you share your story, you are leading your life. Now, both are necessary, like managing and leading are both necessary. Telling stories and sharing stories are both necessary. But it's the application of where you are at that moment in time and space. So to your point, is that if I'm sharing a story then I'm letting people know what is leading in my life. And it's sort of that future storyline that has connection to mystery.
Mystery.
But when I'm telling my story about what's going on in my life, it leans more into the history of what's going on. And if you live in your history, there's a certain energy telling stories that are always coming from the history. Think about it from sharing stories from the mystery and the curiosity and what's happening. Again, history and mystery are important, but again, it's the story in the time and space. What's the energy that's involved with it?
Wow. I don't think we've gone there yet, Stephen. That's awesome. No, I have to stop and think about this for a second. I'm thinking that oftentimes if you're feeling crummy, you might kind of get stuck in your history.
Correct. It's sort of history is high story, history, high story. And this notion of, hi, well, this is my story. And you're going, sort of like you're looking over your shoulder going, hi, this is my story.
Yeah, too often our diagnosis becomes our identity. And oftentimes that's labeled upon us by the medical professional who will go, oh, you have, and give us this great big fancy word. And they're there in their white coat authority-ness. We'll believe that. And gosh, if that label becomes our identity, I can see how it becomes a present part of our history.
And that identity then rolls into how we control our lives. Control in the sense of how do we want to experience our life? So if you're looking over your shoulder and you're pulling that sort of statement into your presence, this notion of the history and the identity and meaning that you pull from it. So if you're looking over your shoulder, and you're going, okay, I'm going to bring my history in, then there's an identity and meaning that's associated with that, which if you go, okay, meaning, control, how am I going to take in my experience? How am I going to control my experience? If you're bringing it from the past always, it's very different than if you're bringing it from the future in, which then affects your optimism, your resilience, all the ways in which you go about living your extraordinary life.
Absolutely. Now, I'm curious, when I'm thinking of my history, though, I could come from two ways. I could come from that victim slash survivor place of, you know, I have survived this label, or I could come from, I have thrived and flourished even with this label, or maybe that's even still negative, but regardless of this label, I have thrived. Because oftentimes as patient leaders, we're sort of like labeled like, oh, she's a patient leader in XYZ, you know, and it's like, okay, there again, somebody's labeling this as my identity. But even as we're telling the history part of our story, I'm seeing how we frame it of victim or thriver would impact our own beliefs about our well-being too, I think.
Again, it's the phrasing that goes with it is, oh yeah, well, you know, I did all these failures and this is what happened and, you know, I thrived out of it and all the other kind of stuff. Very different than, wow, what an exciting life that I've had and the learnings that I pulled from this, and all of a sudden swing it around to share what's going to happen from the future is a very different, the languaging, because words matter. And I have to catch myself all the time about what I'm telling about that and sharing about this. Did you catch that? That, this?
Yes.
Okay. And when you start paying attention, then you start to realize that you're bringing the best of what it is that we call our history. Hi, this is the story. I'm bringing the best of whatever it is that I have forward, rather than relive what I've always done that hasn't worked for me. But if we go into the mystery, it's my story. It just happens to have an E instead of an O. Story. They are rooted in the same idea. Mystery is my story. And you're going, okay, well, this is my story. I'm going to share my story. This is what I'm going to live from.
Live
so that
from.
In my presence, I'm going to live forward, right? Rather than, it's sort of like the term feedback.
Right.
Feed forward or feed fromward. It's a big difference. If I'm giving you feedback, it's what's happened in the history. But if I'm giving you feed forward, it's happening right now, or feed frontward, and I'm anticipating, I'm giving you some insights that are going to help you from your future. Again, those words matter. The root of those words matter.
I know. And some people might be going, well, I don't get it. Let's talk a little bit about these tiny little words that matter. Like you said, this or that. I know you and I have shared at or that, like the locus of control with those words. Let's talk a little bit of why those tiny little words matter.
Well, they're the prepositions, and we call them in the grammar world, like in, on, for, right? Then a lot of the other words like because and whatever, these are transition kind of words. Our language, if we go with Edward de Bono, who I read over the years, he gave such an excellent phrase. He says, words are the freezing of reality. And you may be listening to this, you know, you don't see the video part of it. You would see me going, whoa, big eyes, big mouth, you know, that whole, wow, that is so, so important. Words are the freezing of reality, because we use these words to describe and explain something. And if it's coming from history and you don't have any kind of reference point to that, you have to listen in or see what the person is sharing with you, right? In your presence. But if you're speaking about your mystery and you're bringing it in from the future, then you're both co-creating it at that point in time, because you don't really have a great freezing. You just have a way of sharing it together. So isn't it wonderful when you're talking about, you know, you get your diagnosis, is to actually have a conversation from the future, not the conversation from the past, because that'll influence how you experience your lived experience now of that diagnosis.
And this idea of co-creating with a medical professional versus being lectured to or handed a paper full of very depressing stats, perhaps. Yes. That happened to me. It was like reading all the way, and I'm like, wow, that's depressing, but at least it's just stats. I'm not going to be that part of the bell curve. So that's what is so amazing to me, is too often, even in communication classes, I can see a medical professional who has attended some sort of communication class, and not a very good one, because they're trying so hard to be sympathetic and empathetic and, you know, try so hard. And yet they're missing the point by a mile of what kind of empathy does this person need? Maybe they're a very resilient person and just the facts, please. Or maybe they're type of person, like they need it a little slower, a little more, you'll be okay, you know, type of language or whatever. And that always surprises me how there seems too often to be one methodology for sharing.
Well, that's why I always say, it's not that I'm saying give up in your history, and I'm not saying only use your mystery. You need the elements, okay? It's sort of like you still need to be able to talk about that which is good and that which is bad, but it just depends on how you want to emphasize it in the story. History is important. Mystery is important, right? Good and bad, they're important, right? I liken it to picking up a stick. If you pick up one end of the stick, you pick up the other end, right?
No, they come together.
They come together. You pick up a coin, you get one side and you get the other side. When you manage, you lead. When you lead, you manage. We forget it because we go, well, we just got to learn about what it is to lead. We're only going to talk about the resilience of what it is that's going on in our lives. No, hang on a minute. Don't throw it all out just to emphasize some aspect. Bring the whole in to see you co-create it, right? So I think of that stick. I use the stick because one of the things from indigenous populations, people who have a deep history to the land, they always use the stick as one of the ways in which to have a conversation. I'm just going to pass a stick. What we did in some aspects of our lives, when we started to build out corporations and everything else like this in a much bigger way, the stick, instead of from a conversation point of view, became a pointer, and then it sort of became a punisher.
True. Right? True.
And when we lose sight of our indigenous nature and who we are down into the core, who we are, and that we can influence what's going on in our lives, we miss something here. We've lost something in how to take care of ourselves. Isn't one of the greatest story sharers in the world are those who have the stories of how life began? Sitting around the campfire, listening to those stories?
Right. Yes. And I'm thinking of one of those stories that I learned years ago. I'll just quickly paraphrase it here. But, and when you said the word stick, a lovely story about walking down the path, and up in front of the people who are walking, they all start to stop because there's a big snake right in the path in front of them. And so they slowly and slowly approach very cautiously, only to realize that it's a stick. And I've always thought about that, how we can use that in our lives. Let's not jump to conclusions too quickly here. Let's not, if the decision isn't imminent, you know, like it's not a make or break moment decision, take some time and see what really is that mystery. What is that? Yes. Approach it from curiosity.
Yeah. And that's the co-creation. I actually go so far as you indicated at the very beginning, as I use the word eco-creation. And so I use a lot of nature-based examples and ecological literacy to be able to explain what's going on in our world, because I want to go back into that, the basics of what it is that makes us up.
And a lot of times our stories make us up. I was speaking with a young woman not too long ago on a trip I took down to California, and we were talking about this difference between behaviors, attitudes, styles, traits, things like that. And it, of course, at the core is our identity. And it was fascinating to me that during this talk, she had this moment of insight that she has since connected with me again, saying it radically changed her world, was she had been making fibromyalgia her identity. And my heart leapt when she had that conscious moment of, okay, now is a choice time. What is the choice I'm going to make now that I have this conscious realization that I've been making fibromyalgia my identity? And that is such a joyous time when people come to those conscious moments of creation.
Oh, for sure. And that's why I love the behaviors. And one of the ways to look at it, we have these words like be and do and have, right? They're very simple little words. But if you take a look at behaviors, it's be, have, and the behavior is what you do. So be, have, do, that combination. So if you're going to be something, what do you want to have? Then you can do it. But often what we've always shared was be, do, have. If I be who I am and I do something, I'll get something. And I'm going, hang on, let's look at these simple words and put them into a different combination. Then I realize be, have, do is really behaviors.
Right. Absolutely.
And I went, okay, great. Now I got a better understanding of what that's all about. So when the story comes up, well, it's all about behaviors and all the, okay, let's just take a look at the word and see what's coming out of it.
Because how we think is, there's that statement I've heard before of, you know, how you do one thing's how you do everything. And oftentimes people aren't aware of that. They'll stop and say, well, that's not true. Over here, I'm like, let's map this out and see if it doesn't work that way. Yes. And be able to transition that way. Now, we're just, we've got to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Stephen more about this power of how we talk to ourselves, how we talk to others about what's going on in our lives, as well as how we let others talk to us about it. And we'll get back, circling back around, like, are they implanting these things in us or not? So we'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living. A chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment, a philanthropic organization their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm here with Stephen Hobbs, and we're just sharing the power of words and how they create our reality. Or we can even get into it with Stephen, this idea of what is reality. I love arguing and debating with Stephen on even the topic of what is reality. Because oftentimes, what happens in reality isn't what other people are seeing in reality. I like to think of my siblings, and we're not that far apart in age, and let you talk to them about our childhood, and we had three completely different set of parents. So it's fascinating to me. Let's talk about how words, we've talked about history and mystery and into this idea of curiosity. What are some ways when we're talking to people and they're implanting their, or attempting, I should say, to implant their reality on us? Is there a way that we can sort of like, whoa, whoa, back off, you know, shields up? What can we do?
Let's just look at the word reality. Re-all-it-why. All right. Re is about all of what it is that you're attempting to share so that you can understand it, whatever that it is that you're sharing, and to be able to present the why behind it. So if we are telling into our reality, then there's this sense of, you don't have really have the co-creation. You just feel like, oh, okay, this is what's going on. This is what you want me to believe. This is what you want me to do. And you don't question it. Then you have lost the sense of your it and why it's important, because what you can do is pull what's important from what they're sharing with you. But it doesn't mean you need to take it word for word, action for action. So this means you've got to understand the concept of discernment of that person's reality that you're sharing with you, so that you can figure out what your reality is, so that what happens is you're just dovetailing it together. So discernment is really an important element of this.
It is, and it's important to stay present at the moment when, especially in the medical world, you're being labeled or diagnosed, whatever words you want to put on it, because oftentimes it's easy to accept those as 100% truth, and yet each individual is different, and I say oftentimes these diagnoses are the best educated guess. And I know a lot of members of my audience do have autoimmune, and they'll say, yep, and my autoimmune has changed from how it was when it first manifests. So please, discernment is critically important when we're accepting any information, whether it's generic or medical information. It's really important to discern and not allow yourself to get caught up in the stats of it or the statistics. I find that was critically important. I've told this story before, but I'll share. When I was diagnosed, you have dermatomyositis. Well, first off, the word meant nothing to me. I had to sort of break it down. You know, I mean, I knew I was having skin rashes, so that's the dermato part. But anyway, the word could have been supercalifragilistic at that point because everything froze in time. But then I was somewhat arguing, not really arguing, I was just debating, shall I say, not using the word have with me, just this is the label for the condition you're going through. Okay, that's fine. Now we have a shortcut to the, you know, the condition. But the word have, when I was trying to cancel clear out of my own conscious memory that this had just been embedded, that I have this, that I have ownership of it. And the medical professional just didn't get it. It was just, that was a foreign concept to them, that why, you know, yes, you have this, you know, get real about it. And it wasn't really for their benefit. It was for my own unconscious benefit, because I later said, excuse me. I later said to them, look, I can have cockroaches, but that doesn't mean I own them nor I want them. And when you label, you have this, and you have authority in my mind of being a medical professional, I don't want my unconscious mind to believe that this is permanent forever and ownership. I want it to believe like, oh my gosh, yes, let's eradicate these cockroaches. And mm-hmm. I know sometimes people look at me strange, but I think it's important for my own unconscious safety and clarity and mental stability and resilience to sometimes argue those points just for my own unconscious mind to find out, yep, she's not accepting ownership of that.
It's this notion of communication. I talk about collaborative conversations as being very important to communication. I think when we're in getting our diagnosis and the words given to us, we've got to say, okay, well, what does this really mean to me? Let's collaborate on a conversation to figure out what these words mean, rather than just assume that everything is going to be understood, which isn't always the case. Because I always look at communication. Communication is made up of kind of an interesting take. If you take the letter, the communication, the letter C that's in front of A and near the end of communication, and you flip it around, it forms the word action. So you have community action, and community is made up of level of commonness that unifies us. That's what makes up community. So if you're working with your practitioner, are you not attempting to create a community of significance?
Yes, absolutely. A
right?
Team, an equal member team.
Co-creation, collaborative conversations, the community is the level of commonness that unifies us into action. That is what it is that you would be creating. The discernment now is to enter into that conversation as a collaborative conversation to create a community of significance. And now that is a completely different way to deal with the practitioner that's in front of you and all the other practitioners that are surrounding you and your family and friends, right, that are coming into us. Now you're saying, let's create a community of significance. Not just a community, it's a community of significance. And if you can go so far is to say, let's create a community of movement, then you go into this whole other way in which to experience this lived experience of what it is that's happening to you.
Go deeper into community. Yes, man, you got me running here. So go deeper into community of movement. I love that. Because okay. I feel part of Autoimmune Hour is trying to create a movement around self-patient, self-empowerment, self-communication, self-understanding, and thriving.
Yes. Well, to position this, think of the hand, all right? The pinky is community, just even understanding what that is, which moves into community of connection, into community of practice, into community of significance, into community of movement. Okay? Mm-hmm. So we understand a community level of commonness that unifies us. The community of connection is just setting up the relationships. We're setting up the community of, you know, being together. Community of practice, the things that we do together. Well, that was a very common term, 10, 20 years ago, still around in the workplace, is, you know, the practice of leading, the practice of being a copywriter, and how do we improve those, right? We go to conferences, it's about how to improve our copywriting or improve our managing, right? Improving our diagnosing, right? These kind of things, okay? The community of significance is what's the value that you're adding on, not only to your life, but the other lives of others, this concept of ripple effect. But the community of movement is really about understanding is that there's the physicalness of the community. I'm up, I'm moving around. But it's also the movement of what does it lead to? This community that you're bringing around you is leading to something. Health and wellness.
Yes. Right?
it's leading to something. And therefore, if you're going to be doing some things and being in movement physically, it has to be leading somewhere. Therefore, the programs that you're using has to support that movement. So these programs, the movement in the programs is important, just as it is the movement of what it is you're doing in terms of your community. So what it is that people learn from your diagnosis, your lived experience, can help others. There's a community of movement into that ripple effect. Right out into the part is that, you know what? And I think you did this a little bit. I want to talk to more people. I want to share with more people the story of the autoimmune system, what it's done for me. I'm going to create a movement. What is it, 250 shows now?
Yeah, you're number 250.
There's a bit of a movement there, right? You've taken the physicalness of it, what it leads to, the programs that support it, the community that can benefit from this, practitioners and people who have the autoimmune, right? The whatever they may have at that point in time, and created a way in which to be for the world. So Sharon, I would share with you is that you are being for the world, not being in the world. And for that, I think we all need to celebrate the fact that you're doing what it is that you're doing. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Stephen. Thank you. Now I'm blushing here if you're on YouTube. But it's very important to me. And I'm glad you bring that up, because I love this idea of creating a movement about talking about wellness and well-being completely differently. It's important that we understand that this is an important, amazing machine that wants to find balance and heal itself and wants to keep wellness as part as the, that's the norm. And I think it's so important that we come from this frame of that's what we're wanting other people to understand too. For two reasons in my mind. One is, if you realize that my machine is a self-healing machine, your suggestions might be slightly different on how I could rehabilitate or readjust, or, you know, just like turn the screwdriver over here and get a different result versus something about, oh, I've had community members that mentioned to me, oh my gosh, you know, my doctor wanted to take out this organ or that organ. And I said, well, isn't that kind of an important organ? And oh, no, it's just part of your immune system. And I was looking at them sort of cross-eyed, like, somebody really said that to you? I mean, it just was so, okay. But anyway, luckily this person had said no, and now it's a funny story in their world of of resilience. But
yes.
I would love to just change the dynamics of how we communicate about ourselves and our well-being and our wellness. It's so important to me.
I agree, right? And that, again, communication, conversation. If I may, just another little fun piece. If you take the spelling of the word conversation and you flip the S and the V in the word, it spells conservation.
Oh, cool.
So what would happen if we started to think about our conversations are about conservation, how to take care of what it is that we have. Our conversations about what's happening to us from an autoimmune perspective, right, and finding a way in which to develop a conservation of our life to be able to protect ourselves, just like what we do when we're looking for helping the ducks and ponds.
Oh my gosh.
What would happen if we flipped some of that around and sort of chewed on that for a little bit? Wow, there's something there.
Right. I'd never thought about wellness and well-being and conservation in the same frame. That completely changes the dynamic of thinking about wellness and well-being.
Yeah.
Fascinating. We need to, when I get with Stephen, as you could tell, I get lost. We just blew by that quick commercial break. So hang on, guys. We'll be back in just a minute or two. And when we're going to come back, we're going to talk about the power of mentors. We'll be right back.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at PinkyChenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm here with Stephen Hobbs, and we're just talking every which way. We're both lifelong word nerds, and we've been friends for a number of years, and I wanted him to be part of my 250th episode, and I'm so thrilled he is. And we've been talking about how we talk to ourselves, how others talk to us, and you know what words mean to us and how they create what's happening here and the future, how they frame the past in us, and how important it is to be very clear on how you're talking to yourself. I want to have enough time, though, Stephen. I know you and I both have a great passion for mentorship, which to me is different than coaching. I am a health and wellness coach and an executive coach, but I also am a mentor. And let's talk about how mentors change the world.
I've been a mentor. I actually consider myself a facilitative mentor, because I never quite got the world of coaching for me. If I can share a little quick little story here, okay? The difference between mentoring and coaching. With mentoring, the mentee, the person that's with you, is going to be asking you questions to tap into your lived experience as the mentor. In the coaching, what the coach is doing is asking the coachee questions to get the coachee to realize their accountabilities and responsibilities and get things done. That's how I differentiate the two of them. I never really got into the world of coaching because I kept thinking I need to pull that frozen fish out of my holster every once in a while and whack the person up the side of the head to say, didn't you get that point? And that isn't a great way to build up human dynamics, right? So I never quite got into coaching part, so...
Yeah, and it was a great description of what the difference between coaching and mentoring is, because that's true. It's the direction of the question and whether the direction of where the answer comes from. So,
yes.
And I agree. Sometimes as a coach, when I'm in my coaching hat on, it is very hard not to offer an obvious solution. Sometimes that's where stories come in, though. You can do what I call drive-by.
True.
A drive-by coaching session where it's not from your experience, but you can share a story. And oftentimes I find that you can do that. But now I've had several mentors in my life that have changed my life, and I'm so appreciative of them. Now, if one wants to find a mentor or wants to be a mentor, I know you have a lot of experience in that. What are some ways people can, if they're saying, I think people can be both, actually. You've got a lot of learned experience, regardless of what your learning was, and or there's always room for learning more.
Well, there's a really great phrase that I share, which is, when you listen, you learn. Where you share, you educate. And that means you're both a learner and an educator. Therefore, you're a mentor and a mentee. So even in the mentor arrangement, when you may say, I'm walking into this as the mentor, if you are not open to being a mentee at the same time, then you are doing a disservice to that mentee who is walking in, because they need to understand what it means to mentor as well. They need that lived experience, and you're doing a disservice if you don't allow that dynamic to take place. Okay, because are you not, as a mentor, asking questions of the mentee, not only to help the mentee, but also to help yourself to be better in that arrangement?
So again, absolutely.
It's a dynamic that's there. So to your question, mentors are everywhere. It just depends whose lived experience you want to tap into. Now, you'll notice I didn't say that older person. I said, what lived experience do you want to tap into? I don't talk about mentors by age. I talk about mentors who have a lived experience. They have an appreciation of a legacy story that they are sharing with the world. Now, again, it goes back to story that we were talking about earlier, legacy. Legacy to me is the useful what's that you give to others so that they can learn something from your lived experience. That's your legacy. And the useful what's is time, effort, and money. How are you using your time, effort, and money? That shares a lot about what it is that's going on in your life. And gifting it, not giving, I said gift it, is its conscious decision to gift this to. It's different than, I'm going to give you this. Gift this to you, right? So that others can learn something from you, right? From your lived experience. Therefore, mentors are around you everywhere. Whose lived experience do you want to tap into? Now, you obviously can go to the association. There's, you know, like if you're into business, right, the chambers, the business network groups. If you're looking at finding a mentor maybe to deal with something that's going on because of the diagnosis that you received, there are groups that have formed, nonprofits that have formed. You can reach out into those. But a lot of times, if you just keep your ears open, right, and your ears are actually a really great connection to your heart, right? That's why ear is in the middle of heart. Then just by listening to what's being said around you, the mentor is right there, and you just ask that person a question, and there it is right there in front of you.
Absolutely. And oftentimes, if you don't know what questions you to ask, tell me more is a beautiful question.
The one I always induce, just walk me through what's going on.
Same sort of question. Stephen is a real take action kind of dude. So
walk me through what's going on.
Right. And you can tell so much about people by the word choices they use too. I know that's the kind of question I would expect from Stephen. He's a real take action kind of person. So it's interesting to me, you know, how we can find these things. And we're back here as being a word nerd again, this idea of words. That the other thing that I like to play with words are just trying to uncover where someone is with their words. Like there are, I don't want that to happen again kind of words versus that happened and I'm going here type of words. So an away from point of view or a towards point of view. And as a mentor, I think it's important that they use all of those different modalities, shall I say, so people can get the richness of the what they're trying to share. Oftentimes people have preferences, and I say, you know, share the whole history, mystery, curiosity, to share the whole thing with people so they have that opportunity. Yeah. I had a wonderful mentor.
Sure.
Yeah, I have a wonderful mentor, still my mentor, but at this point after, I don't know, 25 years, I think, if I did the math, that's about that anyway. It's become this wonderful time of each of us sharing and teaching each other. Oh, we'll get together for a meal. And go, oh, and this is what happened. And I knew you would be fascinated when that happens. So sharing up our little list of co-mentoring is another wonderful place for it to be as well.
Well, it goes, and I'm playing with words again. Question, quest, ion, quest, ion. An ion is a chemical particle that's looking for its complementary opposite. If it's positive, it's looking for its negative. If it's negative, it's looking for its positive, because it's trying to come together again, right? So in a sense, the ion is on a quest to find its complementary opposite. So a question is looking for its answer, but an answer is looking for its question.
I always love that. Stephen makes me stop and think for a minute. I have to sometimes replay what he says in my mind until I see the juiciness of it. That is fascinating. That is so true, that they're in search of each other.
And I think that that's when people are in search of, I need that answer. Well, make sure that the question gets you there.
That's true. Oftentimes, if you get an answer that you don't recognize or it takes you by surprise, I always say, you know, well, that was the question you asked. But you know, the response you got is the question you asked.
Well, it's sort of like if the answer is the diagnosis you got is the answer, is that the answer to the question you're asking? And if it's not, then you better reframe the question or ask another question. Because if not, then you are then still not having things come together to work. I also think of positive matter and negative matter. True, we hear about this in the physics world and all of that. Well, when positive matter and negative matter come back together, it's spirit. So when spirit breaks down, it's positive and negative matter. So when we hear phrases like "what matters," well, what you do is you need to find the positive and the negative matter. What they hinder is what helps bring it together, okay, to bring spirit back in. So the question and answer is sort of like another way to express, if the question and answer are coming together and it makes sense, then you've got the spirit that's needed. And it's the deepness of our spirit that allows us to have that lived experience and therefore to learn and know about what's happening to us in our body, in our soul, in all aspects of our life.
And I think the deep learning about ourselves is one of the gifts of my autoimmune. As I look through this period from the original diagnosis to now, such a deeper understanding of who I am, why I'm here, and I appreciate that about it. Some people might think, well, that's kind of strange, but I do find that a deeper appreciation of who I am, and I've come to actually have those tough questions with myself. Who are you, and what is the purpose here? And I think those are really powerful things to take away from any part of your life, whether it was a success or a diagnosis or a failure, anything like that. It's having those conversations with ourselves at that deep level of, why am I here? Who am I showing up as? Is a question I ask myself a lot. So I think those questions we ask ourselves are critically important, as long as we're honest with ourselves.
Truth, trust, and transparency. Three, yes. Three key words to work with, to live with.
Oh my gosh. Stephen, we're just down to the last 5 minutes. I know when you and I get together, we can just over a cup of tea, just chat forever. Yet I want, what final things would you like to share with the audience, and then let the audience know all about the amazing stuff you're doing in the world?
Well, one of the key phrases, and I've used it already, is about it really exploring what it means to be for the world rather than being in the world. You still have to understand what your in is, and like your reflection in, but your reflection on is for the world, and what's that ripple effect that's happening for you? I know that back in 1987, when that machine gun came through the window of that vehicle, touched the tip of my nose, that my life was going to shift, right? there was something that was going to take place, and it has happened. And for the last 30 years, I've been on this way of being for the world. And now I'm working with big mega projects that are helping to develop housing for thousands upon thousands of people in some cities around the world, right? 30 years ago, I was dealing with HIV and AIDS health promotion. 30 years later, I'm dealing with how to help people live, their lives, and so they can be for the world. I'm sharing this because I think that we all have an opportunity to be for the world. And whatever way you can find a way to express that, I would encourage that. And that's living your extraordinary life.
See, everyone, that's Stephen Hobbs. You can tell why I just adore this man. I just love sharing sharing time with this person, because I always come away with new insights and feeling a change in myself that can help change the world. So thank you, my dear friend, for being on the show. Everyone, Stephen, give your website. I know it's a unique spelling, so give your website.
You betcha. It's Wealth Movement, WELLTH movement.com. Wealth standing for well-being and well-living to the nth degree. WELLTH movement.com.
And we'll have that up at understandingautoimmune.com. If you're driving or working out or something as you're listening to this, we'll have the spelling up there too. So go there, find out more about Stephen and his amazing work. Everyone, have a great week. Whatever your adventures, join us next week for another episode. We're starting up the road again at 251. So excited Stephen could be here for my 250th episode. Everyone, have a great week. Whatever your adventures, enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites and other media outlets, is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio.
Take a moment now to find a comfy spot. Wiggle about every nook and cranny to make sure you're comfortable in this spot. Shake out your fingers and wiggle your toes while you take some nice deep breaths and extend the exhale. Let it go with a sigh. That's right. Continuing to release any leftover little stressors of the day with a nice extended exhale. Coming to a place of complete comfort and relaxation. Letting go of all drama. That's right. Just whisking it away. No longer needed. Doesn't have a place here. That's right. Just whisk it away. That's right. Oh, let it go with a sigh. Just enjoying this place of solitude. Savor the colors and the textures and the patterns and just the quiet and comfort. On each extended exhale, notice how it feels to be without drama. Oh, just lovely, that's right. Open and spacious without drama. Knowing that you can take the same feeling of open and spacious, no drama, no need for drama. Right now, back into the real world. That's right. Integrate this feeling of no drama. of relaxation, open in spaciousness. And take it back into the present moment, right now, alert and aware that you can call on this feeling at any time and carry it with you at all times. Welcome back.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, "Sorry, I'm rambling," you say, "Thank you for listening." Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift. Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at PinkyChenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.